देवो महेश्वरः गुरुसाक्षात् परब्रह्मा तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः ॐ सहनाभूतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तुमाभिषावहै ॐ शान्ति 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 दिस् पीरियड् इस् मोस्ट्लि फार् सोर्ट् आफ् चेटिङ्ग् डिस्कशन् So that whatever we try to study in the morning becomes clearer, as clear as possible. So, anything that was not clear, we will get now.
I'm not going to be here for the Jnana Yoga part of it. I told you. Which of your books would help to make that deficiency?
For Jnana Yoga, though, there is really no book. The one book I would very strongly and seriously recommend is the Talks with Ramana Maharshi.
Yes, I have that.
You have that. Mm-hmm. That's all. Mm-hmm. There are two completely different things. One is the Jnana Yoga itself. That is pure Jnana Yoga. Mm-hmm. That book. And the other is Vedanta. We may discuss some Vedanta, but that's not a you have some Vedantic polemics in Talks with Ramana Maharshi. He himself seems to discourage it, sort of. I wanted to say ridicule it, nearly so.
He doesn't care much for anything except Jnana.
No. As a matter of fact, that's only yesterday I was reading. I carry a book around the same. I was reading the first few pages. Even deals with the food and asanas and pranayama. And strangely enough, I had not read it. I had not read that particular portion before. I think my fault is I don't read it sort of from page 1 to page 200. At bedtime, I just pick up one, you know, open it and read it. Every page is as inspiring as every other. And yesterday, I read something very interesting from that. You know what we are talking about? Talks with Ramana Maharshi. And there he specifically mentions pranayama. And pranayama, he says, when your life is in danger, the mind pays attention only to prana. Which means again that you hold your prana, hold the breath for as long as possible. Which means till you are literally knocked out. And he also says that as long as the breath is held, the mind is absolutely steady. He doesn't care for it very much, but they're all helps. Mm-hmm. And number one, he is very fond of what is called self-surrender, which is part of bhakti.
Yes.
We shall come to that later. And he himself, I believe, was a great devotee, very great devotee, mm-hmm. in spite of all that.
Yeah, that's the sense I've gotten reading about him. Mm. But the writings of his that I've read stress Jnana, so.
Mm-hmm. In other words, we must come to this understanding sometime or other, that there is no difference. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think he's also ranked them at one point. He said, Bhakta, but devotion to the Guru is fine, but it has to be superseded by self-knowledge.
That's it. There is a beautiful verse. Ishuro guru atmeti murti bheda vibhagine vyomavad vyapti dehaya shri dakshina murti namah. He almost suggests that one leads to the other. Mm-hmm. But whether that is true or not, the three are one. Ishvara, Guru, Atma. Ishvara is God. Guru is Guru. Atma is the Self. The three are merely three points of view of the same truth. What is called God from one point of view, is the guru from another point of view. And it's the same thing is called the self from another point of view. Why do we make distinctions? And therefore, when we talk of the guru is not merely the human personality, but the indwelling presence. The indwelling presence is there, is the indwelling presence here? Even while looking at the sun, we repeat the same mantra, Yosa avasa purushas soham asmi. That which is in the sun is in me. Mm-hmm. Me means not the body. It is the indwelling omnipresence. God is the indwelling omnipresence. And He is called the self only because it is the nearest point for you to contact. It doesn't mean that He is only in me or in you or in the holy men or non-holy men. In the Guru, He is perhaps, in the personality of the Guru, God is perhaps more readily discernible. I can see it more clearly. But that does not, that means practically nothing.
But the Guru is necessary, you were saying last week.
It seems to be obvious. As long as we don't make the mistake of confining the Guru to the human personality. It is there, and the human personality is valuable on account of the existence of this light within.
I don't understand. Do you mean a disembodied guru?
No.
Is equally
valuable? Yeah, naturally. But the embodied personality of your guru seems to be valuable at a certain stage. Before I can see, before I can see God in a tiger, it's probably better for me to see God in a holy man or in a church or in an image or something like that. So once I become familiar with that, then it is possible for me to see God even in a tiger which is about to maul and destroy me. When it comes to eat me up, I realize I've been going to church and I've seen that finally people who have been going to church go there also when they are dead. So maybe it was the God who took their life away. Who else is there to take your life away? God, no. God gives life, God takes life. You have come in this form now. Welcome. That's it. So it's possible to do that, but not in the initial stages. So first, we get acquainted with God in so many other aspects before we come to that. So it's possible to see God in an exalted personality, and then it is possible to see God everywhere.
Yes, that's. I thought it's a matter of where you can relate to, where you can find God in at that particular point.
Correct.
Yeah.
What some great teachers today are up against is the sort of personality cult that very soon gets built up, which is true. They are right in that. So take the, kindle your little candle and get away. Then there was, I won't mention name because that's not our business here. There is one great teacher, he is vehemently against all these gurus. And I met another great and wonderful saint, and he said, look, what he is saying. He is saying Guru is not necessary. Because this, the second holy man, his whole teaching is built around the Guru. Okay? Your Guru is absolutely necessary. And then comes somebody saying, I am the Guru. I am the living I'm the living master, I'm the only living master, come on, follow me. And then the second one, whose teachings are built around the guru, he had to modify the teaching, say, no, the guru must be a worthy guru. No, the ball is back in your court, the disciples' court. So it's up to you to see if so-and-so is worthy or not worthy, etc., etc. And then you may find the handbag more worthy guru than anybody else in the world. You see how the whole thing goes round?
You're making guru a very loose term then. Anything which helps one to grow.
Right. Correct. Ultimately, it is the light that illumines your path. That's the guru.
When you say to find a guru, you mean simply to accept the guidance that things around one give.
It's not just that. If you've ever been walking in darkness, and you're wondering, is this, can I put my step on that or not? Or is there a hole? And if you had experienced it, and suddenly the cloud moves and the moon shines on it, the feeling that you get inside you is the guru.
Shall I get her? Should I?
It's lovely. Beautiful. I've seen this. That illumination is the guru.
And it happens when one needs it.
One has to make it happen. It happens most of the time, but also one has to make it happen. And it's you only have to meet two or three people belonging to the different, completely different schools of thought. One saying guru is not necessary, one saying the guru is all, the other saying you must be careful, these three. If you talk to them about the same thing around a table, then you get a very clear idea of what all of them are talking about. A guru is necessary, but you must be careful. But you are not there to judge. When I say you must be careful, immediately you think, I must sort of, rub all these gurus on the wrong side and see who is the proper guru. But who are you to judge the proper guru? Says the other man. The one who says your whole spiritual life is completely, totally dependent upon the guru, he says, who are you to judge? The guru is mighty, great. Can I, then somebody comes along and says, I'm your guru. Am I supposed to fall at his feet? The first one says, beware. You may be trapped. And we are seeing this all right in front of us, luckily for us, luckily for you. For me, I've seen dozens of these.
Yes, I've been very suspicious.
No, auspicious. There's nothing suspicious about a guru. Everything is auspicious. When you see this, when you see that someone whom you have been adoring as the guru does something funny, oh my God, maybe he is teaching me that this should not be done.
Oh yes, I don't mean suspicious after you've accepted,
why not?
Suspicious before. Well, you have to give your confidence at one point.
If I give my confidence, then I have lost it. It sounds funny, but it's true. If I give you my cap and you go away, yeah, I've lost it. So if you give me your confidence, you've lost it. You've lost your confidence in me.
It was a bad way of expressing it. I meant stop doubting.
What?
Stop doubting, stop being suspicious. Just be, natural.
Right. I don't want to be suspicious, and I want guidance. I don't want to be completely trusting. I don't want to be suspicious. And still I want guidance. If you put all these things together, you understand what I mean by vigilance. So I must follow, not necessarily follow. I must listen, I must understand, I must get the light, and I must walk in that light. Never mind who that person is. If I am walking in utter darkness through the bush, and if someone has a lantern and he or she is walking in front of me, I walk in that light. I don't care who the person is. The person may be a dacoit, or he or she may be a prostitute or something else. I'm not interested in that. But since I want the light and not necessarily the person, I'm not saying the person should be avoided, not necessarily the person, I am vigilant, I am careful. Our paths may be different, like hitchhikers, you don't ask, you don't propose that you would go exactly where the motorist is going. If I want to go to Seattle from here, I hitchhike as far as the driver could take me, get on where our ways should part, and I thank you very much, you go your way, I go my way. There is no alternative to that. I need the help of the Guru, but our ways may part. Our ways may be completely different, our lifestyle may be completely different. So, this vigilance should be there constantly. And there is no suspicion here, there is no trust here, there is no nothing there. There is this eternal vigilance. And in that vigilance, I see this instantly. God, Guru and Self are same. I don't have to judge, I don't have to nothing.
The person stays autonomous, he stays his own guide. In the end, does he make up his own mind, or?
It looks more it's more complex than it is. Terribly more complex than it is. If she has a lantern, and I also got a funny little flashlight, we are all walking together. Am I walking in her light, or am I walking in my light? Am I autonomous and that autonomous? No idea at all. We walk in the light. Light doesn't belong to anybody. It is not my light, so that I can say I am autonomous. We are walking in the light. And Guru is the light. Guru means light. And there is not even a suggestion that, what I said a few minutes ago may lead to a misunderstanding. There is not even a suggestion that this Guru, I followed him up to a point, and he wasn't able to lead me beyond that, and now I have switched to that, he is superior. No, there is nothing at all. Light is light. There is no superior light, inferior light.
Sometimes the Guru tells the disciple to do things he doesn't want to do.
Who doesn't want to? This disciple
doesn't want to do.
Okay.
And so then the disciple can't be autonomous. He's surrendered his will. I guess that's what I've all thought was always involved in having a guru. And I thought having surrendered my will and being prepared to do all these things I don't want
I don't
to do.
Know. I don't know if you can surrender your will, but you don't know what your will is like.
Well, stop trusting it because, you know,
that's a very good thing. That's a wonderful thing. To be able to arrive at that point is already a tremendous progress. Can I? Now, you must be terribly careful here. Terribly careful. I take her as my guru, let's say. I put her as my guru. I want to be guided. She tells me what... In her presence, I discover that before meeting her, I have been led by my own ego, selfishness. And she asks me to do something which I don't like. Where does this resistance come from? You got it. What more do you want? Once, just once. Surrender is done just once, yes? Surrender is not done every half an hour.
No, that's what I was talking about before.
No, once can I surrender? Just once. Can I surrender completely? Then I see, my God, this is the ego, this is the selfishness. This is what has been riding on my shoulders. Thank you for showing me this. Whether I do it or not do it, that's not... probably she has given me up as hopeless and walked away in the meantime. But that's it. It's worked. In that surrender, is the supreme key. One can do that. And that surrender, if she, my guru, asks me to do something which I had not liked before, and if I had utilized that opportunity to find what is this rebellion inside, who the hell are you? I'm your ego, you know. You are my slave for such a long time. Now that you find a guru, I am trembling. I'll fight you. That's it. If I resolve that business, that at that moment, at that period, at that point of time, then the guru is formed. She, the external guru, the human personality guru, has enabled me to find this inner light in which the ego trembles. That's all. Now I found. The guru is there. Whether I do what... That's not... I think you were here the other day when we were discussing that the guru may sometimes test you and that sort of thing. I don't care. Whatever my guru asked me to do, I did. Pleasant, unpleasant, right, wrong, indifferent. Because then you realize that it is the selfishness, it's the ego, that's the pride, the vanity. That has been worrying me all my life. And she has pointed out that. Put your finger right there. Are you prepared to do this? And you say, no, I'm a Swami, I'm this, I'm that, I'm this. Oh, I'm a respectable person. How can I do this? Let's say she says, go and buy a bottle of whiskey from so-and-so, bring it here. Oh, how can I do that? all my reputation will go. Oh. That is it, isn't it?
So easily. In fact, I think
it's not, you can see it easily as you can see that mountain easily. But when it comes within yourself, it's not so easy to see.
Well, I mean, I think that's what I have done again and again, and then thought it was a mistake.
When it is there, outside, it's possible to see. But when it is within oneself, it is not easy to see. The knees buckle. And it is then that all your suspicions come up. Maybe she is misleading me. How do I know? Huh? Oh, 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 oh.
Yes.
If she does mislead me, that thing again will tell me. Push me into the right direction. I have no bother at all about it.
And then you will leave her.
And that's all hypothetical. I may not. Maybe she sees the light better than I do afterwards, or better than she did before. Mm-hmm. One who enables you to see the self, this self, the ego and the self, or whatever, doesn't matter what words you use. That's the guru. Got it?
Yes, I think what I tend to do is cling after I've seen the self and said, you know.
I cannot see the self. The self sees me.
Yeah.
Who is the self that sees? Mm-hmm. There is no seeing, like I seeing you. It is a certain awareness that springs up within. I can only give you that simple example of you're walking in darkness, suddenly hesitating, must I not, and suddenly the light shining on your path. The thrill and the joy and then the excitement, whatever it is that you experience then, that is the Guru. And that, if you experience in the presence of a person or when you talk to a person, that person also becomes your guru by extension, by courtesy.
If you experience it that once, then that will be your experience. Isn't of it? The individual.
Isn't it? No, apart from that, that experience is you had. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Well, every time when you saw Guru Shivananda, did you have that same excitement?
Isn't it?
I don't know.
Naturally. Naturally. Because every time you see him, he made me see this.
From the first experience.
That is there, that light is there constantly.
And when you didn't see him for a long time, did it?
There's
make
no
a difference?
Not seeing for a long time. There's no. Not seeing for a long time is the body. If we can see the body, it's good, nice. But it's not that. The Guru is confined to your body. Yeah, even in the ashram, we didn't see him all the time. No? In the morning he used to come out. And then in later years it became less and less and less. In the beginning, we nearly saw him throughout the day. He was more out than in. But then as the body aged, that had to be cut down, more and more and more. And sometimes we could see him only for about half an hour, 1 hour a day. That was all right. Sometimes, very rarely though, the body could be ill and not many had access to the bedroom. That's all right. So once you come that close to a person, You can literally see him, no?
I see. The closer I get, the less I can see them. Visualize.
No. Why? That's something else. it's not the brain that sees. Mm-hmm. It's the heart that sees. After some time, I mean, you catch yourself imitating the other person, and then you say, my God, what am I doing? Mimicking the holy man. Achari? You say that means finished? Okay, I'm seeing lying down there. Achha. Pick up his had a pocket watch in a case. Gently open it. Are you a chair? Hold that. Pull him. Get up and go. That is, you must become saturated with it. And that is possible only when what modern day word is